you will fail, but quitting is a decision. I don't want to say never quit. You have to maintain that distinction between those two actions.
Hi, I'm Nils Vinge, and you're listening to the B2B Leadership Podcast, a show dedicated to demystifying leadership development one conversation at a time. Each week, I sit down with leaders in the B2B space to discuss their journey and what they've learned along the way. This podcast is brought to you by the B2B Leaders Academy. The cost of not consistently developing your leadership skills is enormous, and the B2B Leaders Academy features monthly leadership training and live coaching. Being a great leader isn't hard. You just need a guide and the right set of tools. So head on over to b2bleadersacademy.com to join and become the leader you have always wanted to be. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the B2B Leadership Podcast. My name is Nils Vinge, and today my guest is Luke Hansen. Luke, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nils. I am really excited to be here.
I'm excited to spend some time talking leadership with you, Luke. But before we get into that too much, would love to hear about the role that you're in today and the company that you work for.
Absolutely. So our company is called Company Cam. So I'm the founder and CEO. I'm from Nebraska. It's in the middle. Most people have, you know, seen it, probably flown over it. You know, my family owns a roofing company here that my dad started maybe about the year I was born, and I'm 38, so carry the one. It's like 1983, 84. I grew up just like from an almost illegal age, I think, like working on job sites, cleaning up, just kind of like being around it a little bit. And then through, you know, school, high school, college, worked for him most of the time doing all sorts of different jobs. And then even after college, after dropping out of college, going back to college, completing college, barely, went back to work for him again. And through that time, I have a pretty good understanding of how like a local contracting business works, and ran into a problem that I was personally looking for a solution for. Like, we were trying to take all these pictures at all these different projects. The nature of a contractor is you're running this business, but you actually can't be where the action is happening all the time. And kind of the more successful or bigger you get, the less you can be present, you know, all these different projects and kind of be aware of what's going on. And so pictures and communication become more and more important. So I was trying to get everyone to take pictures. You know, we needed to cover our butt. We needed to communicate. I wanted to use them because I was also running the marketing. And there just was no simple way for us to capture all of it and kind of get it organized and have it be findable and usable. I'm Googling around. I'm like looking for anything that is like up our alley, and I couldn't find it. After a while, it was honestly from listening to podcasts. I remember I listened to like some Gary Vee podcasts and that Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income and, you know, other podcasts, but like enough to kind of convince me, hey, it's possible for a person to try to build a product like this, you know, that sees a problem, even if you know how to do software development or you've never done it before. And I just came to the point where I was like, this has to exist. Like, I'm convinced we need this. I've been looking for it everywhere. No one's doing it. Someone needs to do this. You know, I'm like talking to people like, am I insane or is this, do we need to do this? So luckily, like my dad who owned the company agreed with me, and that's how we launched. So we started right out of this contracting business, and, you know, it was really advantageous with the B2B SaaS side or just of a startup is that we didn't have to raise money immediately. You know, often if you're not an engineer yourself, or if you don't have co-founders of that variety, like, you're not really getting anywhere without cash. But we were able, through the, quite honestly, like generosity of my father, to fund the initial execution of it ourselves, which it just gave us a ton of leverage and control that sometimes you lose when you have nothing and you're trying to just raise money on kind of hopes and dreams. But yeah, so that's how we started. That was 2014. We launched the product in July of 2015 and, you know, didn't know what we were doing. Like, just stumbling through it, reading blogs, listening to podcasts, just trying to figure out what is this. And then, you know, from then to now, like, we raised $30 million last year in our Series B. We we're storing over 500 million photos, you know, and we've got over 100,000 users. It's something that has really worked. And we've really found this, I say niche, like this niche with these contractors, someone that would come to your house and build something, clean something, paint something. They all have this problem of they can't be there and they need to communicate. They need to do accountability. And the nature of their work is such that that kind of like visual communication, seeing it and sharing it that way is way more important than for even a company like us, where most of our communication is like Slack, email, that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, 90%, let's say text, 10% screenshots and that kind of stuff. And it's almost flipped if you think of a contractor. Like they can accomplish the majority of their kind of daily communication by like passive visual communication rather than by actively having to be on the phone and doing that. So we've come a long ways, stumbled into this role of tech CEO, definitely not what I wherever I thought I would be. But I'll tell you what, it is so much fun to be doing this. Like I just love doing it every day.
Okay, that's a fascinating story, number one. I mean, going from observing things and working for your roofing company, your family's roofing company, and then identifying the problem, coming up with a solution. I'm curious about, you know, you said that you came to this notion that it's possible to build a product. And how did that notion of building a product evolve as now you're responsible for and running a company, and you've raised $30 million. Are you still building a product or how has that changed?
No, that's a great question. So it's all about building the product because you have to have a product. And when there was, you know, three of us sitting in a room, sort of like management culture, it's like, no, dude, we just have to like build and release and sell. And, you know, you're just kind of any given day doing whichever one of those things you feel like needs to be done, kind of like hustling it out. I love products. Like I studied mechanical engineering before I dropped out the first time, but I lit a lot of credits on fire when I came back because I switched away and just got a business degree. But I love how things work. My buddies that are mechanical engineers, I'd have these ideas of like, hey, what if we like built a camera gimbal this way or just how could this thing be better? I just like that problem and thinking about it. And it amounts to kind of being critical of things, you know, like, oh, like what could we make this thing any better? So that was always really fun to me and came really naturally. I realized pretty quickly that I will become the bottleneck here. And actually, as the founder, CEO, like when you're starting a thing, all of your leverage is people. It's other people. And if you can find other people that you are excited to work with that are better than you and they're working toward the same direction you are, you can accomplish quite literally almost 10 orders of magnitude more. Not that even anyone needs examples of this. You know, any given solo genius can accomplish so much. Whereas if they can pick people, coordinate, delegate, it just opens up the possibilities. And so I was like, okay, I have to realize that I'm building a company and a company is just a bunch of people that are working in the same direction. I'm building a company. I'm not building a product and our product matters, but the people build the product. And so finding these people is really, really what matters. I mean, even today we have a new hiring class today. So there's like 8 new people starting and it's kind of crazy, but I was talking to them about how important your decisions are. I quoted the book, the Ben Horowitz, what you do is who you are. And just that line is basically worth it. The book is fine, but just like hearing that line and thinking on it, because they were asking me, how did you, the culture? And it's really good. And we really like it. And I was like, you know, we didn't have a big plan to do this, but like what you do, how you treat people, what decisions you make when it's important, how you handle when you fail and things go wrong, that is who you are. That becomes who your organization is. And if you do well with that early with people, you attract other people that want to work with great people. It's almost like if you're going in the right direction, it's easier to keep going in that direction. You know, it's almost like it pulls you forward. Whereas if you're going in the wrong direction, it's almost like pulling you back and you have to break that and then get moving forward. And so I think that like momentum has really carried us on the kind of like culture and people side, but it also just recognizing These are real people. They have tons of opportunities. Smart people. I mean, especially in the current world, I mean, everyone could leave their job tomorrow, and tons of people are, you know, and we haven't seen hardly any of that. And I think a lot of it is because of that just ongoing understanding that, like, it's the people, stupid. It's not the app or the marketing or whatever. Not that it all takes care of itself exactly, but that great people do great work. And as a founder, your job is to find those great people and help keep them pointed and kind of guided in the right direction so that everyone's not running, you know, sideways in a sense.
Yeah. So, okay. So when I drill in on that just a little bit, was there a pivotal moment when you realized this, that it's not about the product, it's about the people? Did something happen that, you know, all of a sudden you were like, okay, I see this a little bit differently, maybe going from 3 to 5 or to 10 or to 20 or whatever it was. But at what point did that really take root?
No, sorry, that's a great question. I felt like I had it there. I don't know that it was an exact number of people, and I can't recall the, like, in just the instance, but I remember making all these decisions around the product and, like, that were too deep in the weeds for me to be in. Like, it was this notorious joke of me hassling, standing over people's shoulders and hassling them about, like, the border width of, like, rectangles and things, like, just these minute design things that are just not, you know, you don't need your the owner of the company sitting over your shoulder, like, nagging you about this. But I had handed off some of that responsibility to Tiffany, who's now our VP of product. But at the time, she started as, like, a part-time office manager support, you know, just totally, and, like, is one of those people that was just hungry for responsibility and saw something that needed to happen and took care of it. And, like, steadily just, hey, like, if people are hungry for responsibility, feed it to them and you'll be better off. Right. And giving her more, and I was realizing, like, oh man, she's doing this better than I was. And I need to think like this across the board because I can't be the bottleneck. It was those moments of realizing I'm a bottleneck here and I'm spending my time almost like a nitpicking when what I should be doing is, like, out building and bringing the team together. And I can still have opinions, you know, and everything, but I can't be so on the ground just worried about. They say this in the contracting space all the time, working in your business or working on your business. And to me, that kind of, like, the hiring and the building out the team, that's working on your business. Over the long term, you've got to be doing that because that's the whole game that we're playing. You know, like, you build a good product, okay, it's just going to sit there. If someone builds a great team, they're going to keep building good products. They're going to build the next good products. They're going to have a better idea. And that this has materialized, you know, where I have ideas and a vision, and then you bring in awesome people and they like, well, what about this? And it's like, oh, that's a better idea. Let's do that. And so, yeah, don't have the exact story, but it was one of these things that kind of, like, it's like bankruptcy. It happens slowly and then all at once, where you're, like, slowly realizing it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is the important thing to look at.
Of course. Why didn't I see it before? Because it was literally right in front of your face and you couldn't. That's okay. You brought up the topic of failing earlier, and there's a lot of failure that I'm sure that happened early on. So how do you, you know, failure is some of those things championed in the startup community, especially, and I think even broader now. So, but there's a difference that you told me about when we were talking before we got started about failure and quitting. And I thought that was a really important distinction that would love for you to share with this audience.
Yeah, I believe that very strongly, that you will fail, but quitting is a decision. I don't want to say never quit. You have to maintain that distinction between those two actions. I mean, I've failed in leadership, in managing, and I've failed in pushing us in the direction of building certain products. Like, we tried to, right when augmented reality came out, I was like, that is the future, perfect for our customers. So we built it. It got a lot of leads for us, but it wasn't actually down our core value proposition. And so it just clogged up our sales funnel, and it, like, people didn't like it. And then we didn't want to dedicate the resources to maintaining it. And then Apple built their own, like, default one that, like, and so it was like, you're going to make these decisions that don't play out. And look, failure can be worse than that. I mean, I remember I was about a year in, and one of the kind of, a person who had been volunteering at one of these local startup events told me, you're not doing very good. I don't think you're the right person to do this. You should like find someone and quit doing it type of like, basically. And he wasn't trying to be a jerk about it, but it wasn't particularly encouraging when you do wish, you know, you see like, oh, Slack, oh, they're worth $1 billion. Like you see other people that are just like, it can't go wrong. And it's just like this beautiful vertical like line on the chart.
The graphs lie a lot.
Which is never really how it, well, not never, the exception proves the rule. It goes that way for some people sometimes, but for the most of us, it isn't. You live on the flat part and then you work your way up. But I remembered feeling kind of embarrassed at different points and just in general, like inadequate. But then with this guy, I was like, why would I believe this guy more than myself? And I couldn't come up with a reason, actually. I was like, I don't think this guy knows more about this than I do. I think I do, actually. And I think, you know, you try to be a fair critic of yourself. And, you know, we all have strengths and weaknesses and, you know, you want to keep a realistic view of those. But basically, I decided, okay, I believe in the success of this way more than this other guy believes in the failure. Like, I know that this is needed. We're not doing everything right. There's always a million problems, you know, and if you can't handle there being problems, like, we'll go somewhere else because, like, I just, like, have made peace with it, like, many things are sort of constantly broken or breaking or whatever. You think you fix something, you patch the hole and you got a hole over here. But when you committed and you decide, no, yes, that didn't work. But do I believe that this good future is possible? Do I believe that what I sold the investors, what I, you know, do I believe that it's possible? And if you believe that it's possible, you know, you, or let's say likely, whatever your kind of risk tolerance is, then you can keep going and you can just take the failures and they can become learning opportunities and there'll be stories that you tell. And who doesn't love hearing a story about how someone else screwed up radically and then didn't quit and kept going and won? That's like every story. Like, I don't know. I mean, inevitably, like someone had the cleanest, straightest path all the way there, but not really. That's just what happens. And so I'm going to do a minor transition here. That idea of you believing it, I think a lot of people pitch their ideas to me, like a startup idea, things like that. And I try to communicate to them, like, it's crucial that you believe this more than anyone else. And it doesn't mean you see the whole plan. It doesn't mean that you know that it's a certainty, there's inherent risk, et cetera. But like, if you don't believe it, you're not going to be able to sell it to early employees, to people who you want to bring on, or co-founders. If you don't believe it, if you can't sell people to ride with you on this journey, investors aren't going to believe it. They're not going to believe it more than you. And through our last fundraising that we just did is when I kind of crystallized this in my mind. And I went into every conversation with just this attitude of, I absolutely believe in the future of this company more than any of these investors disbelieve it. Then it's not going to affect me. I'm not going to get down on it. I have this opportunity to learn. If they're critical, they might give me some key information, but like, I believe what I'm saying. And if they don't, then let's make the next phone call. And that it's kind of freeing, but it's also hard because we all have doubts, right? Like, or we're like, oh, I think it's possible, but can I really do it? And I think some of it just comes after you've made that commitment of, I believe it, then it's almost like you just have to do it. And it requires you to like, to do better, to grow up, to
solve the problems.
Yeah. And you, yeah. Anyway, sorry. Okay. Rant
that's,
over.
No, that's fantastic. And you hit on one of the most important core foundational things from a psychology in leadership perspective, which is, where are you deriving your confidence from? Because if it's like the former case, as you described, comparing yourself to the other person who is giving you this advice, or the market who's telling you something, or an investor, something else, you've got zero control. Whatever they believe, if you believe they are smarter than you and more committed and more right than you, you've already lost, right? But when you made that switch and you brought it internally and you said, you know, do I believe in the success of this and this problem that we're solving in this market and this opportunity more than anybody else, then you could roll through anything, solve any problem, bring anybody on board, get them excited. And I think that switch is incredibly important, regardless of, if you don't have to be a CEO, you'd be a people leader, you could be a manager, director, VP, doesn't matter, but it comes back to you and what you decide.
And you just want to be borderline delusional. you can't be all the way delusional. Reality exists. It's going to happen to you sometimes. Hey, you're wrong and you failed and you learn and you move, you know, but that like probably more confidence than you have any right to have is a good place to be. And I feel like for me, I am almost irrationally kind of like positive, or like I believe in the possibility. Like I believe in the possibility of me being better of this kind, like in things that it's like nothing is easier than to think of reasons a thing won't work. You tell me your startup idea. Oh, what about this? There's a million like ways that things can go wrong. I do think of it as in a sense a choice. You know, you got to be open to reality and paying attention, but you just kind of have to make that choice that this is how you're going to proceed. And you run the risk of embarrassing yourself dramatically, right? If it doesn't work, one of our employees that we hired like last year said back in something like 2014, he's like, oh yeah, I remember bumping into you and all you would talk about was company cam and Bitcoin. He's like, I should have listened to you. And I was like, yeah, but you know, it could have gone the other way. And then I would have been like the biggest idiot ever. And you know,
you never know.
You don't know. Right. Absolutely.
Right. That's awesome. We'll get back to the interview in just a minute. This episode is brought to you by the B2B Leaders Academy. The cost of not consistently developing your leadership skills is enormous. The B2B Leaders Academy features monthly leadership training and live coaching. Being a great leader isn't hard. You just need a guide and the right set of tools. Head on over to b2bleadersacademy.com to join and become the leader you've always wanted to be. Now let's get back to the interview. All right, so there's been a lot of experiences that you've had growing up into CEO of this company, now raising $30 million and almost 200 people inside your organizations, geographically spread out all over the place. And now you have this crop of leaders who are growing up inside of your organization. So how do you think about empowering them to carry on this incredible work that you and the team are doing, and to instill just as much passion and culture and everything that you brought to the table? But now you've got these orders of magnitude of people beneath you that aren't directly working with you every day. How do you keep that thread alive?
That's a really good question, and a really hard, fundamentally hard problem of business. I'm going to refer just to this new hiring class hour ago, had a meeting with them, kind of giving them some company history and just this kind of stuff. And I was talking about that, hey, this person who's the VP of this, they were cold calling for us like 2 years ago, and they were ready to take responsibility. They saw things, they cared about them. And I was like, truthfully, they cared about them more than I did. Like when I see someone in an area who cares about something as much or more than I do, I just want to keep handing them that responsibility. That was what was hard for me. And it's still hard, like this kind of letting go of certain things and just entrusting them to someone else. But when you do that, you give them the opportunity for ownership, and the good people that you have will run with that. Like they will take it and they will keep, and it doesn't mean that they'll become the VP of something. It's not even that, but it's just like they will act as if they have control over this thing and it matters to them, even as an employee, and not like now we do give our employees stock options and et cetera, but like that sort of being entrusted with control, with responsibility, with ownership of things is very empowering. And other people want to be a part of that. And they care way more about the outcome when they feel like they have a legitimate hand in it, as opposed to they're a cog being told, you know, exactly what to do all the time. You know, I feel like I had about three more things to say about this, if anyone could tolerate it. Could you repeat the question though? Because I lost it in my monologue.
Like you've got this group of leaders now who are closer to 90% of your organization than, more close to the 90% of your organization than you are. And how are you going to instill in them these same traits and same things so that the, you know, not just culture, but the practice of leadership and some of the principles that you've talked about remain true to this 90% that you're not touching on a day-to-day basis?
Thanks for reminding me. That's still a fundamentally hard problem. In our company, I want to try to push decisions down to the lowest level. Like you should be able to make a lot of decisions as someone, you know, in the sense ground level, work it directly on something, on a team with a customer. And you should be empowered with, you know, we have our company values, we have a lot of this stuff, but you can say, it kind of goes back to that book, What You Do Is Who You Are. You can say a lot of things about a thing, but what you do is who you are. And that the leaders at this company, wildly different personalities than me. You know, if everyone was like me, oh yeah, it would be an absolute catastrophe. But you know, we've got just different strengths. And I think that what I believe we have, and I don't know how rare this is, but it feels really important to me, is that we are trying to build trust with our employees, with our customers. And like, our mission as a company is to build trust through truth and transparency. That's like, we're judging what we're doing against that mission. Are we helping our customers build trust in their organizations with their customers? And are we doing that here? And so everyone here knows that the leadership of this company is not in any way trying to scam them. There's a really true understanding that we are all on the same team, that we care about the people here as people and not as, I don't know, just like immediately replaceable cogs in a sense.
Yeah. Just, yeah. If you don't like it here, we'll replace you tomorrow.
That just matters a lot, that a whole bunch of different styles of leadership or whatever, you kind of go any which way on a lot of that stuff when you really believe that, okay, even if they're doing something wrong, even if they're making the wrong choice in leadership, I believe that they're acting out of good faith and that what they're telling me they're trying to do is what they're actually trying to do. This is what we're trying to do. Could be right, could be wrong, but that there's a trust there that I know that we have here overwhelmingly that people see and that people can get with. And so like when it comes to this next layer of leadership, what I'm trying to get better at is asking questions. And it's easy to try to offer opinions, give quick solutions, that kind of stuff. But I'm trying to listen, to ask more questions. And then as a, you know, a leadership, like the executive team and then the managers, it's a lot of what are you running into? What is the priority here? Is the priority this or this? Because, and then over time you align on that stuff and it kind of flows through. It looks differently all over the place. Sorry, I'm getting overly metaphorical here in a like a clumsy way. What you do is who you are. And I think it's been shown here that the things that we are trying to see, the things that we talk about being for, we are for. And that gives, I think, everyone else the kind of confidence and courage in a sense to just act that out, however it manifests through them, which is not the way I would always do it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think that principle of, you know, confidence to act out equally applies. And it's a great piece of advice. Like whether you're CEO and you have the ability to do that throughout the organization is one thing, but sometimes people and leaders are inside organizations where that's not possible. However, there is things that you control 100%, right? And everything that you control, you can absolutely 100% show up in that kind of a way.
Yes, for sure.
And just like you were saying, listening, asking powerful questions, you know, leading with discovery before solutions can be an incredibly powerful way. So even if your organization isn't, you know, as well set up or doesn't have the same level of values and trust and transparency that you and company can have, that's advice still is 100% applicable because you got to focus on what you do control.
Yep. If you are telling the truth and you are being vulnerable to your team or whomever, their trust will look, some things you can't overcome, you know, they may still quit the organization and go work somewhere else or, you know, but that is the foundation for the kind of long-term great relationship that you want to have. It certainly doesn't require you to be in charge, though. If you do have the cover and the support of the next layer over you, it's much better because like all of our people here know that I'm not going to put them in a position where they've got to like say one thing and do another thing, you know, or like mouth our values, but then do this other thing. And that like, you know, some decisions may be hard. They may not agree with them, but they're not going to be asked to, in a sense, talk out of both sides of their mouth. I feel like that happens at a lot of places. Like, oh, we care about this. Go fire all your people or something like that.
Well, our people are our most important asset. Well, okay, here's the leadership training and development program. Nope, we don't have budget. It's like, which one is right? It happens all the time. Yeah. So if you operate inside that environment, it's a lot easier, right? And if there is continuity through the different levels and things, much like you've described. But, and if you don't, it is going to be harder, but it is still possible. Would you agree that, you know, possible to operate in that way with regards to what you do control?
Yeah, 100%. And that, yes, that is the foundation of good leadership. It doesn't require you to know more than people or to be right. No one wants, look, I'm a know-it-all and no one likes that. So you got to remind yourself, yeah, okay, just because you think you have a smart answer here doesn't mean that anyone else is going to be impressed by it or cares at all. And that just the sort of like, hey, listen, even telling people we're in a bad spot here. The business says this, like this is what I think is the path that we have to follow. Do you agree? And just that communication and the honesty, vulnerability. Yeah, it really does work over time. And during this time, I mean, we've had super low employee churn. I mean, I think we got 190 people or so, and we've like lost less than, I want to say like two or three people over the last X amount of maybe 6 months to a year. When things are going well, it's like kind of what you're saying, it's easier to keep them going well. A lot of problems and frustrations when things are going well, you know, some of that comes out when it's not going well, and things have been going well for us, but that we are not experiencing that kind of great resignation that is going around. And that I think it's a credit to how our people are behaving there.
I'm sure it is, based on what you described and shared with us here today. The great resignation, people calling BS on the world that they have lived in for a long time because they had to. And as soon as they don't have to, they made a different decision. But if that world is one like Company Cam and like that kind of culture where trust and transparency is key, where leaders are empowered, et cetera, then why would you want to leave? And that's perfectly evident in the, you know, employee turnovers numbers that you have. So I think it just speaks volume to how important incredible leadership is to any company, but especially in the early growth stages too, because it cements the foundation on which to build. When you go from 200 people to 500 people, that's a big change. And if that company culture stays with it, then there's no reason why you can't expect similar low, very low employee turnover over that time.
Easier.
Exactly. They're just bigger problems, they're there. Right? Every day. The problems don't go away. They just get bigger. All right, Luke. So last question here. Let's say you could go back in time and sit down with your younger self, perhaps in the 2013, before when you were coming back, before you even knew, or right at the start, when you started identifying the problem that Company Cam now solves, right? And that trust and transparency for the contractors, for the company, et cetera. And you knew everything you know today. So you had all the benefit of that incredible experience, what it's like to go through to the point, raising $30 million, having an almost 200 person company, growing incredibly fast. What advice would you give your younger self?
I would definitely run with, it's the people, stupid. Making that jump in the product to people. Again, the product really matters. There's so much leverage in making something awesome. But it's like stepping a layer above and looking at it from a, you know, not being on the court in a sense, but being in the stands and seeing more that just, okay, you need to focus earlier on the people. There's been recent, you know, startup stories, people earning $10 million a month and getting a little ahead of their product market fit, you know, but once you're there, like it's just so much of building that team. And this is all stuff, gosh, you read any blog, every person will tell you this, or not every, but I remember reading this stuff and it just didn't, I don't know. I'm a slow learner. It just, sometimes it's got to push its way through my brain, but that like, it's the people, stupid. And then quite honestly, that for us, I think we should have leaned in a little more on the kind of like growth side, financial, maybe fundraising, just like been more aggressive, because every year I would look back and think we could have pushed harder. We could have invested more. We could have kind of leaned in a little bit. There's definitely some people that don't need to hear that advice, you know, the people who burn $10 million a month, but like, you know,
yeah.
But in general, once you see that you have kind of some smoke, the like focusing on great people and putting them in a position to do great work and then trying to scale that as quickly as you reasonably can in an uncomfortable way. I think becoming comfortable with the discomfort, like just understanding that comfort is not the goal. Having the perfect execution of everything is not the goal. It makes everyone feel good. No one wants to be the one who like messes something up or it goes sideways. Kind of that like upping the pace and tolerating the problems, the frustrations, the experiments that go wrong, etc. That's something I would have told myself, because I still think I was on the right side of it for the most part in being okay with things kind of being good enough. Like I remember argued with a lot of like every engineer wants to build the perfect like version of a thing, you know, every designer. I mean, I would tell our designers like, look, the 10-minute version of what you're doing right now, this is mostly for like marketing and ads and stuff. Like the 10-minute version is like 95% as good as the 10-hour version. If we can up our kind of shipping rate and we've got 90% of the quality on most stuff, then we're winning. And so to me, it's like that moving quick, just with that mentality that like nothing will be perfect. You have to let it be that way. Then focusing on the people. I don't know if I would have listened to it. You know, I'm notoriously thick-headed, but that's what I would have told myself.
ITPS. It's the people, stupid.
Oh, I like it.
I think
it,
we
yes.
got a new acronym there. I love it. I like that. Just go around saying ITPS just to yourself all day. That's awesome. Wonderful advice. All right, Luke. Well, it's been an absolute blast talking some leadership with you. Congrats on all the progress that you and the Company Cam team have had on your incredible employee retention and culture building activities and putting the people first and seeing just what it's like, and that you can build an incredibly fast growing B2B SaaS startup, raising $30 million, still have incredible culture based on some of these principles we talked about today. So thank you so much for sharing your insights and your wisdom. Look forward to hearing about all the wonderful things that you and the Company Cam team are going to do in the future.
Thank you, Nils. Good to be here, man.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the B2B Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd welcome you to subscribe and give the show a 5-star review. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at b2bleadershippodcast.com. As always, I'm Nils Vinya, and I hope you'll join us again next week. Take care and have a great rest of your day. This podcast is brought to you by the B2B Leaders Academy. The cost of not consistently developing your leadership skills is enormous, and the B2B Leaders Academy features monthly leadership training and live coaching. Being a great leader isn't hard. You just need a guide and the right set of tools. So head on over to b2bleadersacademy.com to join and become the leader you have always wanted to be.